Paul Ryan in Indianapolis. Did he help Richard Murdoch? Democrats publish an e-book about Murdoch. John Gregg has a highway plan and strange bedfellows in a state Senate race. That plus symphony troubles and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 21,
12. Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, GOP vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan held an Indianapolis fundraiser. No cameras from the media were allowed inside.
Even before Paul Ryan's motorcade rolled up to the JW Marriott, Democrats were trying to use the Ryan visit to their advantage.
You know, I think the big problem for Republicans is the fact that Paul Ryan exposes how extreme Richard Murdoch is.
Ryan already shows up in an ad from the campaign of Democrat Joe Donnelly appearing to disagree with Murdoch.
Mr. Murdoch's point is that any movement that happens should not come from the Republicans, it should only come from the Democrats.
Yeah, I obviously don't agree with that.
Murdoch and Ryan met privately before Ryan told the crowd of about 130, quote, "We need this man in the United States Senate." The Murdoch campaign couldn't wait to share.
It was very strong, and I know it was heartfelt because I could tell from the chemistry. They've met before this summer on different occasions.
It was a sideshow for the Republicans who paid $1,000 to hear a Ryan speech.
It's very sincere, very pointed, and very motivating.
Did Richard Murdoch get what he needed from Paul Ryan? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, is an endorsement worth anything if you can't see it?
This is all about an exercise in damage control. I mean, he was repudiated by Ryan on national television. And what's interesting about this is this has been one of the worst weeks in actually presidential campaign history, and you've got every Senate candidate around the country who's a Republican distancing themselves from the ticket, from the top of the ticket, from Romney and Ryan, and you have Murdoch desperately trying to you know, get an endorsement. It's kind of like when he invested in the junk bonds for Chrysler as it was going down. Here he is in the Republican ticket at the same time. It's kind of an amazing phenomenon.
Well, it's pretty clear that the Murdoch campaign sought out the private meeting with Ryan. And it's also clear that they wanted attention given to this. They had photos on their Facebook page the next day of the private meeting, but yet no media cameras allowed inside. That's, if you're the Murdoch campaign, you got to be frustrated by that.
Yeah, I'm sure they were. You're trying to control the damage from the fact that they've been using Ryan in this commercial against him. But Ryan said what he needed to say, which is we need Richard Murdoch in the Senate. And Ryan, of course, wants a Republican Senate. The last thing we need is more Harry Reid for another 4 years and for this country, and that's what he wants. You're going to have control of both houses of Congress to get anything done because it's continue to block. The Senate continues to block everything the House does and vice versa, and it's just really not working. Until you have a party that's going to do that, it's not going to work.
Had the Senate blocking. You had the four senators
and
blocking
the Democrats
blocking
control the Senate.
Jobs bill for veterans.
And you have a president and the United States Senate.
And I also know how the
filibuster haven't passed a budget in 3 years.
We had 5 Republican votes.
Not one budget.
Every Democratic vote for the veterans bill. And Republicans
blocked. You haven't passed a budget in 3 years.
Let's get back to the Ryan visit.
You don't need a budget. You don't need a budget.
We don't need the Tea Party controlling the Senate.
Back to the Ryan visit. There's there's some irony here, because while this was going on, the controversy over the hidden camera video of Mitt Romney at a private fundraiser was just building. And now, by the end of the week, we hear that the Romney campaign is going to have the media cameras in every fundraiser.
It is grand irony. And this is going to become almost the notion of the hidden camera or the unseen camera will be almost reduced to bumper sticker status. I'm already, Saturday Night Live is already honing their sketches where the other surveillance or surreptitious cameras, what they recorded that Romney supposedly said. And this, it's become a punchline. So yeah. As we've discussed many times, it takes on a life of its own.
And we're going to have a little later in the show a little more discussion of cameras.
Right. I mean,
at the Ryan
fundraiser.
But
as far as this event, I'm sure, you know, all of this happens in real time. If they had it to do over again, they probably would have changed course. But as far as the event itself and how it was handled, to echo what was said, it's basically a checking of that box. You know, you had the questions raised by the Judy Woodruff interview and the comments that Paul Ryan made about the suggestion that Murdoch was going down a path that he himself, Paul Ryan, would not agree with. So this needed to occur in some fashion, and now that, as I say, that box has been checked.
All right, so Mitt Romney leads in Indiana. Everybody expects that Mitt Romney is going to win Indiana. So they don't want to make any mistakes. That's why they don't allow the media cameras in there, and then it turns out they're hurting themselves in the meantime.
You know, I disagree with John in the sense that, you know, you can check that box, but it means nothing if nobody sees it. And I don't care if you've got a picture on Twitter. You saw Judy Woodruff ask the question. You saw Paul Ryan make the response. Unless and until you see him standing there with Murdoch by his side and they talk about that issue and he gives Murdoch his support, didn't happen.
All right. Indiana Democrats have written an e-book about Richard Murdoch. Call it a new high-tech negative ad.
The title of the book is My Way or the Highway. It's a one-sided story told from the Democratic point of view. You can get it on Amazon, and you can even get a version for Kindle. If you're on the Democratic email list, you can look for it in your inbox.
This is a story that needs to be told because it's integral to the Hoosier economy, and there's so much information to put into it.
That information includes state documents and legal bills paid by the treasurer's office as Murdoch sought to stop the Chrysler bankruptcy because, he said, he wanted to protect the pensions of retired teachers and state troopers. At Republican headquarters, both the content and the delivery method get criticized.
Well, the whole kind of world is trying to condense information, package it so that you can read and get up to date on issues and move on. When you look at Twitter that's confined to 140, you know, characters. This is going to the other extreme.
That thinking has led Republicans to create a one-page website called Wrong Track Joe, focused on Joe Donnelly's voting record.
I think it's much more user-friendly, and that's the world that we live in today.
Mike McDaniel, politicians often talk about responding in kind. Richard Murdoch can't match that ebook, can he?
Well, the ebook's put out by the Democrat Party, not by Donnelly. So the contrast is the Republicans have a page where they're talking about Donnelly's voting record, which is what's important here. But again, you know, the ebook stuff, this is all a distraction of what's important. 43 months of unemployment over 8% in this country, 47 million people on food stamps, 1 in 6 people living in poverty in this country. Those are the issues that people care about in this campaign. There aren't going to be enough people to look at this ebook to make a difference in this campaign.
Well, I think there may not be enough people who are undecided who look at the ebook. I would agree. But this is in microcosm what's going on in this race. The Republicans want to make this about national issues. The Democrats want to make it about Indiana issues.
When you talk about jobs and unemployment, Richard Murdoch's conduct would have cost Indiana 100,000 jobs. As it is, it cost Indiana taxpayers $2 million. And he was tilting at a windmill from the beginning. He knew he couldn't stop that bankruptcy. But what he did is he spent $2 million of tax money to make himself the darling of the Tea Party by tilting at that windmill and used lawyers out of Washington, out of Republican firms in Washington at $1,000 an hour for this. It was ridiculous. He shouldn't have been investing in junk bonds in the first place. But he opposed the bailout, okay? Yeah. Ryan, who he brought in here for the fundraiser, worked with Joe Donnelly and Richard Lugar to get the money for that automobile loans. And here he is trying to embrace him when they're not even on the same side of that issue.
Yet the e-book, while novel, is something that has to be melted down into a 30-second ad if it's going to be effective.
I think that they're onto something here, Jim. And I think, you know, with all due respect to Eric Holcomb's argument about the attention span of the public, I think that they've hit on an idea here where they document in their own terms, whether it's novel, quote-unquote, or not, and then they're going to use this going forward. There's clearly a plan in place that they're using for this purpose. And I would argue that, you know, a lot of people are tired about the deadlock or the gridlock in Congress. They want people to, get something done so that the economy will take off. The thing holding back the economy is the fact that Congress will not do anything to improve the economy so that all of this pent-up capital can be put into use. Everybody's waiting to see what will happen. And until something happens, none of the other things will occur. So I think that if Donnelly's plan here is to show Murdoch is a part of the problem as opposed to part of the solution, which is compromise, then I think that they've got a pretty powerful tool.
The Cliff Notes, when do they come out? Will it be before November 6th for those who want something between 140 characters on Twitter and the full book? I think it's correct to say that not a lot of people are going to read this cover to cover if an e-book has a cover.
9,000 words, I understand.
But we're in a climate now where people are saying, well, we're tired of the sound bites and 30 seconds of this person hammering that person. We want a little more substance, or so they say. So the fact that this book, 9,000-word book, is out there, it may be enough for some people in terms of the perception. It's another brick in the perception wall.
It certainly is. It's the bills he paid.
It's your interpretation of what those
documents. Did he not pay $2 million?
And so, people don't have to read it. People don't have to read the whole thing for it to have the desired effect, I think.
Time to move on, and time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. Last week's question was, which candidate do you support in the Senate race? 44% said Joe Donnelly, 55% said Richard Murdoch, 1% said the Libertarian Andy Horning. This week's question is there too much negative campaigning? Your choices are A, no, I love a good fight, B, yes, my ears are bleeding, or C, just eliminate the black and white villain ads. To take part in the poll, just go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. John Gregg has a plan to build new roads and bridges. The Democratic candidate for governor said that if he is elected, he will ask the General Assembly to free up a portion of the Next Generation Trust Fund. That fund was created in 2006 using toll road money and is to be used to maintain projects built with major moves money that also came from the lease of the Indiana Toll Road. Gregg says the money is needed now to preserve the state budget.
We are not touching that surplus. We are leveraging dollars at a 10-to-1 ratio, which is done all the time, where we can take $300 million and leverage $3 billion, which, according to the Federal Highway Administration, can create jobs up to 97,000 men and women in construction jobs like you see here in the background.
John Ketzenberger, is that a good plan?
Well, it sure sounds good. And I suppose if they use it as a bridge, if you will, to finding a permanent solution to the lack of funding available for roads, then that's a good thing. But the real problem is that there's, you know, the gas tax has been 18 cents a gallon forever. It means that we don't collect much because of improved efficiency. There are fewer federal funds coming into Indiana. There's no future for future federal funds coming into Indiana. You need to find a way to pay for this. And you can't just rely on the sales tax or the gas tax. So I think there needs to be a comprehensive look in the legislature to find out exactly how much they need and then figure out the best way to pay for that. This is a nice device from a financial perspective if it's used as a bridge. If it's the way we're going to do road funding for the future, we're in big trouble.
Well, and I think because Mitch Daniels created the Next Generation Trust Fund. Republicans are going to be reluctant to undo that. In the meantime, Mike Pence says something needs to be done, but he's taking a wait-and-see approach. Does John Gregg get points for coming up with a plan?
Maybe, yeah. The Pence campaign is much more the blue ribbon panel approach to look at the problem and decide what needs to be done. John's right. The funding mechanism, at best, this would be a one-time shot. And this is a problem, we should point out. This is not an Indiana problem. This is a national problem. Reports out this week, very authoritative, well-respected researchers pointing fingers at lots of infrastructure problems across the country. I mean, we're in a heap of hurt when it comes to our roads and bridges.
Have been for a long time.
And have been for a long time. So this kind of campaign proposal, it seems to me, is a twofer. One, you know, if it whether it happens or not, you're appearing right to be proactive in addressing something that I think we all recognize whenever we hit one of those, knock our car out of alignment when we hit one of those chuck holes, that needs to be done. And also, unlike some other things, there's an immediate job creation component here. I mean, that's why we saw Barack Obama has used infrastructure improvements in several instances in the past 4 years, most notably with the stimulus,
right,
as a way to gin up the job production. I think that, so you do get something of a twofer here.
Similar proposals have been tried by Democrats in the Indiana House on amendments that were rejected. I expect Republicans aren't going to buy it, but is it possible?
No, and the problem is because this whole buy now, pay later approach is something that got us in the fiscal problems that we were in before Mitch Daniels took over the process. And it's kind of like using your retirement money to pay your monthly bills. It's not a very smart thing to do. And the fiscal leadership in both houses will reject this out of hand. Everybody agrees that there need to be long-term solutions.
But nobody's offered one.
Not yet, because I think they're going to do exactly what John suggested and take a look at it in a comprehensive way in the next legislative session, because you do have to find a way to pay for this stuff. But this is not going to get it done. Borrowing against the $500 million annuity and paying for it is like paying for your monthly bills out of retirement. It's
not what it is. What it is you take the capital there that's now currently making no income from interest because the interest rates are so low, and you lend it to local units of government so that they can construct and then pay it back at virtually no interest. It is not buy now, pay later.
How do you come up with the money to pay it back?
Right.
Well, that's for the local government to decide.
It's called tax increases.
Well, you're the party that says no taxes under any circumstances. Look, so how do you fix this problem, Mike? Your entire caucus takes the pledge from Grover Norquist, says no taxes under any circumstances.
The problem is not that they can't get money, local governments. There are all kind of places to get money at virtually very low cost. The problem is paying it back. And the one way they're going to have to go to pay it back is to raise taxes, either wheels taxes, property taxes, whatever they got to do to do it. It's not going to happen.
Okay, so it's not going to happen on the state either, so the roads and bridges crumble.
As a practical matter, this is largely a federal issue, too. Those dollars are at their core going to be federal dollars, and we can't even have agreement or certainty there, because it used to be the highway funding bills tended to be 5-year agreements. Now there's such gridlock, they can only muster a 3-year agreement. So there's uncertainty in a number of fronts.
It's the one fund that NDOT can count on for ongoing repairs to bridges and roads. And so they're going to steal it. Democrats want to steal it.
They don't want to cause taxes. Not all of it.
We might actually fix roads and bridges instead of looking at the money in the bank, making money.
For the record, the proposal is to use $300 million of the $500 million. Yeah. Moving on. Budgeting and bill paying is something most of us don't learn until we're adults. That will change if one state senator has his way. Senator Brent Waltz of Greenwood announced a proposal this week to create a financial literacy curriculum. Waltz is partnering with the Indiana State Teachers Association. He said the initiative will teach students how to craft personal financial plans, understand credit and debt, and how to save and invest.
Younger students might learn about balancing checkbooks, the importance of paying down credit card debt. Older students might learn about some of the dangers of subprime mortgaging, as well as learning about college loans and some of the do's and don'ts with that.
John Schwanis, when's the last time you saw stranger bedfellows than Brent Waltz and the ISTA?
I'm hard-pressed to come up with an analogy or a metaphor that does justice to just how strange bedfellows these are. You have a very conservative Republican and Brent Waltz, and you have an organization that has tended to be supportive over the years of Democratic candidates. What you have here, clearly, I think, is there's the main plot, and as is often the case with regular books or e-books, as we were talking about, there's a subplot, and the subplot here is perhaps dissatisfaction by the teachers' union over positions taken by Brent Waltz's opponent,
Marianne Sullivan, who's a state representative,
related to charter school legislation,
this is a targeted
and her
race.
Stance there.
Yeah.
Indeed, it's a targeted race, and this is all about trying to maintain a seat from the ISTA's perspective. I was mystified when the ISTA did this. I assumed that, even though they disagree with Marianne Sullivan, that her philosophical position was probably closer to theirs than Senator Waltz's, but they made the choice, and now they're all in, so it'll be interesting to see where it comes down.
And they say that their endorsement of Waltz came on a recommendation of local teachers.
Mm. Well, that's good, and the program is probably a good one, and it's too bad that Senator Waltz didn't have that earlier, because then maybe he wouldn't be involved in the lawsuits he's involved in related to the bankruptcy of the business of which he was an officer, and if the court documents are to be believed, received a payout of $145,000 right before the bankruptcy was filed, when the workers didn't have their taxes and their unemployment benefits funded. So I'm sure that if he had learned this earlier, he wouldn't be in that problem now.
See an opening there, did you?
It's hard to wake up every day with that much anger.
Actually, it's really good because I can vent it all on you.
There you go. That's right. You did do a nice job with that.
Who wins that race?
I think Waltz wins that race. But, put the politics aside for a second. This is a great idea, and it should have been done a long time ago.
It's been talked about.
I've always thought there should be a curriculum called life, real life,
right?
Where you're talking about things like balancing checkbooks and teaching
and
people
civics
to do
too.
That kind of stuff. I agree and completely agree with that. And this is a great idea whose time has more than come, so I hope they get this done.
All right. Back to presidential politics, where Mitt Romney is battling perceptions this week that were created by a secret recording of his remarks at a private fundraiser.
These photos were taken on a smartphone by one of the people who paid $1,000 to hear Paul Ryan speak. Steve Lowry is a real estate developer in Yorktown.
I was excited to be with vice presidential nominee Ryan and wanted to share it with my family and friends.
You weren't the only one.
No, there's a lot of individuals taking a video and still pictures.
Lowry shared his photos with us along with his belief that smartphones will never be banned from political fundraisers.
Here's my son and Ryan.
With a woman in the background taking a photo.
Mitt Romney is engaged in damage control now for comments captured on a smartphone during a private fundraiser.
And I'm sure I could state it more clearly and in a more effective way. Than I did in a setting like that.
And Steve Lowry understands the problem. 24 years ago, he worked on the vice presidential campaign of Dan Quayle.
You had old cameras like this that as soon as you came in, you were knew you were being filmed. Today, you have pocket cameras that if you're not aware of it, you can instantly be recorded.
Mike McDaniel, what's the moral of this story?
How many times have we talked about it on this show that in this day and age, somebody's always going to have a camera all the time? So to think you're going to appear in front of any group and say something that's not going to be repeated is just crazy. And it amazes me that people still are learning that lesson in this day and age. And it's almost frightening that people have to do that over and over again. Every politician says stuff they wish they hadn't said. Obama talked about if you had a small business, you didn't build it. I'm sure that's not what he meant. That's what he said. It just was a dumb thing. This was a stupid thing to say. How many times do they have to learn these lessons? And you know what? The media should be invited to every one of these events, in my opinion. And to come into any state at any time and not do media events along with these events doesn't make any sense to me. On a whole lot of levels, let alone at this level.
Yeah. What's amazing about this is that this isn't something that he said inadvertently. He's doubled down on this since that conference. He says he could have said it better, but the principle that he's talking about the givers and the takers, he's repeated over and over and over again. So, the fact that he was caught on tape just shows you how oblivious he is.
He wouldn't have to be addressing it again if it hadn't been a hidden camera.
That's right. But it just shows you the country club mentality. He didn't even notice the waiters.
All the crazy stuff we say on this show, I'm glad it's not being recorded. This is a recorded
job.
Finally, speaking of jobs, musicians with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra are taking their fight for a new contract to the streets. The contract dispute between the ISO and the Musicians Union continues. Musicians play lunchtime music for free. The symphony canceled its first two weekends of performances because contract talks have stalled.
Playing music is what we do best. So that's that. We think that's the best way for us to get the word out.
And that's Jerry Montgomery of the Musicians Union and Delaney. Will this get solved without hurting the quality of the symphony?
I hope so. You know, I'd like to see the mayor step in here. I don't think you can be a world-class city without an ongoing and excellent symphony orchestra. And I'd like to see the same kind of enthusiasm that we've seen for sports for the symphony.
Yeah, does this point up a lack of interest and support for the arts?
Well, it points up the dramatic difference in the level of interest. And I think that's unfortunate because I think you're right about the fact that a world-class city needs to have a world-class orchestra, and we've got one here.
And this is no less an infrastructure issue in some ways than what we were just talking about. It takes this kind of structure to have a quality of life.
Yeah, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.